Hello and welcome to the I'm Learning Mandarin podcast. On today's podcast, we speak to a guest whose interest in Buddhism led him to begin self-studying Chinese 2 years ago. However, after teaching himself to read the language, he faced a common problem. Speaking was still incredibly difficult. After years of delaying speaking and using input-heavy methods, he decided to start outputting and reached out to the I'm Learning Mandarin community for help and advice. Taking this step to work on his speaking led him to have an experience that would change his life forever. Before we proceed to today's episode, a quick word from our partner, Mandarin Retreat. Mandarin Retreat are an organization based in the UK that organize immersive Chinese learning weekend trips and extended camps. Chinese tutors and native Chinese speakers are brought together with Mandarin learners of all levels for retreats packed full of fun cultural activities, all delivered 100% in Mandarin Chinese. On previous trips, retreaters were treated to lessons in making Chinese dumplings, calligraphy, as well as Tai Chi. If you're based in Europe and are looking for opportunities to immerse in Chinese for extended periods, you might want to check out their summer camp, which will take place from August the 28th to September the 1st in Wales. All food and accommodation is included, and anyone who books on a retreat will get 5 online Chinese classes with the private language school LTL Mandarin as part of the package. All levels will be fully supported by a team of volunteers and Mandarin tutors. For more details, check out mandarinretreat.com, and I'll include a link to that in the description. Now on to today's episode. So, a few weeks ago, a message appeared on the I'm Learning Mandarin Facebook group, addressed to me from a learner called Jake Martin. The message read as follows. Thank you for accepting me into the group. I just found your podcast and website the other day, and found them to be extremely helpful. I started learning Mandarin in the beginning of 2021. Like many others, I was pretty lost at first, not really knowing the best way to learn a language. Fortunately, I found out about the Refold community, which provided some structure for my learning. So just for some context, Refold is a language learning community that emphasizes the importance of mass input. We've had several Refolders on this podcast before, including co-founders Ethan and also Matt vs. Japan. Back to Jake's letter. Now my reading comprehension is fairly good, but my listening and speaking skills are abysmal. As a result, I've been looking into alternative study methods over the past several months. What I appreciate about your perspective is that you value the immersion experience without being dogmatic about it. As you wrote on your blog, you're a former Krashenite who experienced a sense of disillusionment. That is exactly what I've been experiencing for quite some time now. Krashenholics Anonymous, anyone? So I was intrigued to learn more about Jake's journey of learning to speak Chinese after going through a long phase of relying exclusively on listening and reading. So I invited him on the podcast to talk about his struggles, as well as share his story about how having the courage to speak Chinese recently led to a truly life-changing experience. Okay, so Jake, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm a big fan of the show.
Perfect. So take us back then to that moment when you posted that post, which I've just read out on the I'm Learning Mandarin Facebook group. What was your kind of thinking at that time, and what led you to the point where you wanted to make that post?
Yeah, so what was happening at that time was I had already been learning Mandarin for about 2 years, 2.5 actually. When I first started learning Mandarin, my motivation was because in October of 2019, I had decided to become a Buddhist. Not only that, but when I was doing that spiritual exploration, I found one particular tradition that stood out to me the most from a theological and spiritual perspective that happened to be from China. It originated in China. And unfortunately, because of a number of different events that have occurred over the past 100 years or so, it's particularly difficult to study this tradition, especially if you're somebody living in the West. There's not really much of a presence. And so when I first started learning the language, that was kind of my main motivation, was to be able to understand texts and lectures in Mandarin so that I could actually understand a lot of this stuff. I ended up discovering that there was actually a temple from this tradition, from the Tiantai school in my area, which was very fortunate. I mean, like I said, it's very difficult difficult to find temples from this particular tradition anywhere in the world, really, at this point. And so that ended up actually shifting my focus away from trying to be entirely input focused to then wanting to actually start outputting, because I knew that I would want to go there, visit the temple, talk to the people at the temple. And so because of that, I ended up really having to struggle a lot with how I had been doing things to then what it was that I knew that I needed to do. I knew that I needed to do something to try to practice speaking, because I knew that I didn't want to go there and just try to, you know, speak without any practice or anything like that. And so from there, I ended up really paying more attention to speaking things. I ended up finding a teacher on iTalki who's from Taiwan. So we had been meeting since October of 2022. And so I had already had some experience with speaking. That really opened my eyes up to a lot of different insights in terms of actually trying to improve specific things about my speaking skills. And so what ended up happening was, is when I ended up finding out about your podcast, I ended up finding the episode that you did on tones. And then I also read the blog post that you had written to accompany that episode. And what I ended up finding was, you know, I listened to the first clip 6 months earlier when you were just starting that journey of correcting your tones, and then listen to the clip afterwards. And what I noticed right away was, you know, I sounded exactly like how you sounded in the first clip. And so that really told me that I needed to do something about this, that I needed to take it seriously. And not only that, but reading and hearing about your experience and finding out that, you know, you had followed a very heavily input-based approach, following very heavily comprehensible input and Stephen Krashen and all those things. And in the podcast episode, as well as the blog post, you talk about how that didn't really seem to be enough to improve your speaking ability, and that didn't really seem to be enough to correct tones. That really was an eye-opening experience to me. And then seeing that you went through that process of deciding to go from an input-based approach to practicing tones and practicing speaking and just trying to do things a little bit differently, that told me, you know, that, you know, here's somebody who has been through the process and this was his experience, and here's somebody who I should really be listening to for some advice. And so that's what convinced me to then write the post and ask for, you know, more questions about what you had written and try to figure out how I can then implement that into the study routine that I've been following.
Well, that makes perfect sense. Yeah. So had you been studying Chinese, did you say, for around 2 years? Up until the point when you posted that?
Yeah, so I started learning Mandarin Chinese in January of 2021. When I had first started out, I really had no idea what I was doing. There were certain things that I kind of knew, because where I live in Canada, we have to take French classes between grades 4 and 9. And so I had some experience in a traditional classroom environment learning French. And I knew that at least for most people going to Canadian schools, they don't end up actually learning French. They've taken the classes, but if you actually ask them to speak anything in French to you or to hear something in French, they wouldn't be able to actually use the language. And then when I was in university, I went to the University of Toronto. At that time, I ended up actually taking a German classes, 2 semesters of German, and it was a great class. We had two very good professors. But the problem is that I found that by the end of the 2 semesters, I hadn't really seemed to progress very much. And not only had I not progressed very much, but I found that as the actual process became more and more difficult, learning all of these different tenses and all the having to study all this different vocabulary, it really seemed like the focus shifted from me trying to learn the language to me just trying to get good grades so that I didn't fail. I knew at that point, going into Mandarin, that I wanted to do things differently. I didn't want to try to just follow a very traditional, you know, textbook type of path. You know, I wanted to do actually something that was more practical, something that I could actually see the results in, and hopefully something that would be a little bit more interesting as well, because sometimes you go through looking at these textbooks and you read the dialogues and things, and it's not always the most engaging type of content. And so going into Mandarin, I knew that I wanted to do things differently. What I ended up spending quite a bit of time at the beginning was actually Pimsleur, because if you look online and you search best resources for studying Mandarin, you find all these like top 5, top 10 lists and everything. And Pimsleur is always pretty high on a lot of those different lists. But there were a couple of issues that I ran into. The first problem was that I realized that I had a lot of bad study habits, that I wasn't necessarily the best student. And so it actually ended up taking much longer to do the 2 levels of Pimsleur that I did than what it really should have taken. So that was the first problem. And then the second problem that I noticed was just that, you know, even taking that into consideration, the pace of Pimsleur was just very, very slow, which tends to be one of the criticisms of Pimsleur, is that it doesn't seem like you're necessarily learning a lot, which is kind of part of the method. They're saying that, you know, you drill a very small amount of vocabulary so that you can use it well. But by the time that I had finished the first two levels, I really felt like, you know, there must be a better way to do this. And so that's when I was starting to explore around a little bit and ended up eventually, you know, very quickly on, very early on, actually finding the Refold community.
When you initially found the Refold community then, how did you find that? Was that through kind of doing research around how to learn a language, watching YouTube videos, or what kind of got you into that?
It's funny, I can't actually, it's kind of like a little bit of a blur as to the exact way that I found them, but I know that it definitely would have been on YouTube somewhere. I would have been watching some kind of video or something like that. So I was looking at a lot of methodology, and then I ended up finding, I think it was probably, it probably would have been somebody like Luke Truman from the Refold Mandarin Learning Community. So I think I found his videos first probably, and then I ended up finding Matt versus Japan and binging a lot of his videos, just trying to learn what it was that he was actually advocating for as a method. And there were a couple of things that I really noticed right away. The first thing is that Refold really took a very different approach, that it wasn't conventional, and that's actually one of the things that the Refold community very much prides themselves on, is not trying to do things the traditional way. And so that was something that I immediately appreciated. And then I also appreciated the fact that it was an approach of comprehension first, and then output and a lot of the other things later, which I felt like for the time was perfect for the goals that I had, because at the time I had basically just wanted to understand native content, maybe one day do some translating, but generally speaking, the majority of the goals that I had pretty much all stemmed around just being able to understand content, especially understanding, like I said, Buddhist content in Mandarin Chinese. And so when I had found the Refold community, I really liked that component of it. And I also really liked the idea that when it comes to languages like Chinese or Japanese that have character systems, that they actually advocated for learning characters very early on, which seemed to be the opposite of the advice that you would normally hear in more conventional circles. I found that a lot of other places, you know, including Pimsleur, seem to advocate for, you know, speak first, learn the writing system and characters and how to read later on. With Refold, not only are you encouraged to actually learn to read the characters pretty early on, but it's actually even suggested that reading is considered to be perhaps the best way to actually acquire the language. And so to me, it seemed like I was getting the best of both worlds, where I was able to learn the characters and I was being told, hey, this is actually going to help you learn faster. And so to me, it was very appealing. And it also, what I liked about it as well, was that it was also bringing me closer to my goals, because I wanted to actually read the texts in Chinese. And you're now telling me that I'm going to be able to do that pretty, you know, at a much faster rate. And so that was something that very much stood out to me. And so from there, I ended up jumping into Refold very quickly. You know, I joined the Discord community, and on the Discord community, they were working on a 1K character deck. So 1,000 most frequently used characters. And so I downloaded that experimental deck. While I was doing that, I started watching native content with English subtitles so that I could get used to the sounds of the language. And so the first show that I watched was actually Investiture of the Gods, and I really enjoyed that show. I ended up going on Pleco and I bought the Mandarin Companion Graded Readers, the first level of 150 characters, I believe it was. And then I ended up buying the 79 Graded Reader bundle, the 79 books that it has. And so I started from the lowest level of 150 characters and ended up working my way all the way up to 3,000 characters. I mean, it was a very enjoyable experience, because I was actually reading stories that were relevant to Chinese culture and that were interesting, and many of them actually were like simplified versions of very popular Chinese novels and things like that. Not only was it entertaining, but I also found that it seemed to be, for me, the best way to acquire characters.
So during this period then, your main goal you mentioned was to get good at reading, and you didn't initially have big ambitions around speaking. When I went through in my own journey, like a similar period of kind of intensive input, I did believe in the back of my mind that although, like, right now my main goal is to improve my comprehension skills, eventually, like, this is going to lead to being able to speak fluently. Did you have like a similar sense in your mind?
Well, I think because I was so focused on reading, and because I was so early on in the process, I don't think I was really thinking a lot about speaking. But at the same time, I mean, the Refold community does talk about speaking, you know, but they advocated for doing it much later on. And so because of reading the Refold guide and watching the videos from Matt versus Japan, I got the sense that, you know, maybe it would help with speaking later on. At the very least, that's kind of what was being promised. But at the same time, that really wasn't the focus for me. And so that's not something that at the time that I had spent a whole lot of time focusing on.
When did that then start to change? When did that speaking come more to the forefront of what your goals were and what your focus was?
So I was going through this whole process of just entirely just only input-based content, watching a lot of TV shows, listening to a lot of podcasts, doing a lot of reading. And so once I got through the graded reader bundle on Pleco, I ended up going into native content. My first book was Sahara Gusha from Sam Mao. What ended up happening during this process, one day I was searching something and then when I was searching up some characters in Chinese, all of a sudden I just saw, you know, here's this temple that's about an hour and a half away from where I am. You know, I could go there. It's one of the few temples that really exist in the world. And it happens to be following the exact tradition that I've been following. I had reached out to them and found out that they didn't actually have any classes or services or anything like that in English. And so at that point, I was very motivated to really start getting my Mandarin Chinese skills really up to par so that I would be able to go there and be able to participate with people. And even though I still had a lot of doubts and a lot of fears, I decided to basically plow through them because I didn't want to put this entire section of my life, this whole spiritual journey, on hold just so that I could adhere to an input-only approach. There were actually a lot of articles on their website in Chinese. I started reading through a bunch of these articles so that I could at least learn some of the vocabulary when it comes to Buddhist texts and things related to Buddhism in the temple. And so that's where I started. About a month or two later, I ended up getting my teacher on iTalki. She's from Taiwan. And what I really liked about her was that in her description, she specifically mentioned that she was an advocate of comprehensible input. And what I found very early on, actually in my first lesson with her, the first trial lesson, is that speaking I felt like was a lot harder than at least the Refold community and the Refold guide makes it seem. I feel like there's kind of this general idea within the Refold community that if you just, you know, spend all this time inputting, you know, getting a lot of input, reading a lot, listening to a lot of podcasts and watching a lot of shows, that somehow you're just going to internalize a lot of the grammatical structures and a lot of the vocabulary and things to an extent where you're just going to be able to use it. And I just really found that that wasn't the case for me. When I took my first lesson, I found that I was actually able to understand a lot of what my teacher was saying. But the problem that I had was actually trying to remember how to say certain things. I knew the words. Like if you had given me the word, I would have known exactly what the word was. But actually trying to use that word in a sentence was a completely different situation. You know, and that's still a problem that I have even to this very day, is that there's a lot of words where, especially if I haven't used them a lot, you know, I'm thinking of the word and I know that I know the word. I know that I've seen it somewhere. But what ends up happening is that when I try to use the word in a sentence, I just can't think of it, especially within a timely fashion to actually use in the conversation. And so what ended up happening after the first trial lesson, I was very much like blindsided. Like I kind of felt like I was kind of in this state of shock of just feeling like, you know, I had spent all this time doing input only. And that got me to a certain point, but I felt like there was an entire other aspect of the language that I was just completely ignoring. And I felt like there was something more to this whole process that I feel like isn't really being addressed. I there are a lot of debates within the language learning community about input versus output. There's a lot of those kinds of debates happening, but I felt like I was tapping into something deeper that went beyond those debates. And I kind of started to feel like, you know, maybe an input heavy approach, while it might be helpful when it comes to comprehension and certain aspects of the language, wouldn't necessarily be good enough to make you a fluent speaker. And I felt like, you know, maybe if I spent less time worrying about things like fossilization and whether or not I'm going to mess up my output or, you know, things like that, And if I spent less time worrying about, you know, what method is the quote unquote right method, that maybe I would actually be able to take all of that time and actually apply it to learning the language and using the language. And maybe I would find that my experience would maybe be a little bit different from, you know, some of the other experiences that you sometimes hear about, you know, one of the common things brought up in very input heavy communities is the idea of people who live in a country for a very long period of time and they're still not able to communicate and they still have a bad accent and they still run into a lot of problems. And so that's kind of used almost as like a gold standard for why Refold is the right way to do things. Whereas I just kind of felt like after my initial experience of taking, you know, even just this one class, just the first class, really told me that there was a lot more to this and that there was a lot more work that needed to be done.
Yeah, I think that's like quite a common trajectory. Something similar I went through, and I know a lot of other people have gone through in terms of transitioning from this idea that input is everything toward realization that there's a whole other dimension that if we just throw our eggs all in one basket that we're kind of missing. On that kind of theme, how did you find then at that initial stage when you made that decision to start working on your speaking? One of the most difficult aspects of Chinese, as everybody knows, is tones. What was your approach to tones, and then how did you find played out when you kind of transitioned to working on your speaking a bit more?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So towards the beginning, I've heard a lot of stuff of people saying, oh, you should pay attention to tones. But I found the problem that I had was, to me, it seemed almost like, you know, you sometimes hear the word people use, you know, tone deaf. And that's kind of what it felt like. I really felt like I was tone deaf, because if I heard a lot of these tones in isolation, then it seemed I would understand the concept. But then when I actually heard them in words and in sentences, I wouldn't be able to tell you what a particular tone was. To me, it just seemed beyond my reach. And on top of that, it also seemed kind of overwhelming. There are so many aspects of learning the language that I feel like, in my case, I basically just put off learning tones. That's not to say that I wouldn't pay attention to them if I saw them. You know, if I was looking at a dictionary definition in Pleco, for instance, you know, I would take a look at the tones and I would think about it from time to time, but I would never actually like try really hard to do things like drilling or, you know, actually trying to specifically memorize the tones, especially because there's kind of a sense, especially in the Refold community, that if you do enough input, then you're going to eventually just naturally acquire tones and naturally be able to hear tones. And so there was a part of me that was just kind of waiting for that moment to happen. And I was also thinking about something that's mentioned in the Refold guide and that Matt versus Japan talks about, which is there's a particular scientific study that he cites about when a person's a baby and they're first acquiring a language, their ears are basically able to hear all the different sounds. But then once you reach a certain age, I think is it maybe like a year, I want to say, the brain starts to filter out different sounds. It becomes a lot harder to hear sounds that aren't related to your native language. There was kind of this idea in the back of my mind very early on that even if I did focus on tones, there's a good chance that I'm not going to hear any of these anyways. You know, there's a good chance that there's going to be a lot of sounds that I'm not going to be able to hear anyway. To me, it just didn't make any sense to focus on tones. Once I started to focus on speaking a little bit more, that actually caused me to deal with a lot of the fears that I had surrounding speaking and surrounding things like fossilization. Through that process of actually making the decision that it was okay to do early output, through that process, I ended up starting to have different doubts about certain elements of the process. I was starting to feel like input wasn't enough to make you a fluent speaker. And so that really started to take me back to the idea of tones a little bit more. And then when I ended up actually finding out about your podcast and listening to the episode that you had done talking about your experiences with tones, and then reading the blog post that you had written, you know, that really convinced me that, you know, I needed to do something about this, because, you know, here's somebody who had gone through the process of focusing almost entirely on input, and, you know, he wasn't able to acquire the tones, you know, naturally. So who's to say that I'm going to be able to do that? And that's one of the things as well that I notice about the Refold community is there's a very perfectionist type of mentality. And so there's very much this idea that you shouldn't output until you've basically reached almost 100% comprehension. But what I've noticed is that there were a lot of people who had reached, you know, relatively high proficiency within the language. You know, I think of somebody like Luke Truman, who you had on the show earlier. You know, I think about some of these people who had reached, you know, really high levels within the language, sometimes in a very short period of time. But I never really saw any evidence of people reaching this so-called state of perfection perfection that was being advocated for. And so to me, it kind of seemed almost like this type of mythology or legend, you know, kind of almost like hearing a story about Bigfoot or something like that, where, you know, here's this legend that everybody talks about, but there's not actually any evidence of anybody having actually reached this stage. You know, even Matt versus Japan, for an example, as good as he is with his own pronunciation, from what I had seen from his videos and from what he was talking about, you know, he still considered himself to be far from perfect as well. And that was after years and years of working really hard. And so for me, I just kind of felt like I've been putting off output for something that I actually have no idea if it's ever actually going to happen. When I read your article and I listened to the podcast episode, that really kind of sealed the deal for me of just saying, you know, I really need to start taking this seriously.
I'm really interested when you read the article, when you came across the article that I wrote, and I'll put a link to that article in the description. It's basically a kind of roadmap that I designed to help people who are in the situation that you just described that you were in and which I faced as well, where you've kind of been focusing on input or you haven't really been focusing on tones for a long time. And then you come to a point where you need to correct your wayward tones. What do you do then? And I kind of wrote that this roadmap to try and help people based on my experience of what I did to overcome that problem. I don't kind of sugarcoat it necessarily. I mean, there's some advice that I give in that blog, which might seem slightly daunting. It's kind of what I think needs to be done. But for example, I say, you know, like go back and memorize all of the tones for all of your known vocabulary and use flashcards to do that. Once you start to develop that habit, it starts to become a lot easier. I'm just wondering in general then, like reading that blog, what was your initial reaction? Was it daunting or did you find it helpful? How did you feel about it?
Well, at first I feel like I just kind of felt a sense of relief because I had already, you know, like I said, I started with my teacher on italki in October of last year. And so by the time that I actually read your article and listened to the podcast episode, that was May of this year. And so there was quite a period of time of experimenting with speaking and kind of dealing with a lot of these questions about output. And so there was kind of just a sense of relief when I had first read the article, because I just kind of felt like, you know, here's somebody who understands what it is that I've been going through. Here's somebody who's kind of maybe had similar doubts to what I've been experiencing. And, you know, this has been his experience. And not only that, but the fact that you had already been studying for a much longer period of time, that was very convincing to me. It's very easy to kind of act as if, you know, it's going to be this thing that happens in the future. You know, if I just wait another year, my tones are going to be perfect. If I wait 2 years, my tones and my speaking is just going to be completely perfect. But really seeing that that wasn't your experience at all, for me, was very validating. It was very relieving for me. It really inspired me to start, you know, looking at things in a very different way. You know, as you know, I had written the post on the Facebook group. I joined the Facebook group and I had written the post on the Facebook group and, you know, asking some questions about the process that you used. And then I took some of the feedback that you gave me. And then I basically tried to figure out, you know, how can I take this and apply it to my own routine? I actually went through all of the vocabulary that I already knew on Anki. Then I basically took that list and I was tweaking it and really trying to figure out, you know, what are the words that I already know? And then I took the advice that you just mentioned of making flashcards for each of those words. And even though I knew that maybe that would seem kind of extreme and maybe theoretically, maybe it wouldn't lead to anything later on, I thought, you know, it's at least worth a try because here's somebody who's gone through that experience themselves. And this is what he's recommending based on his own experience. And this is something that, especially hearing the before and after clips that you provided in the article, in the blog post, that really stood out to me of saying, okay, I mean, if this is what he did, then it must work. So after I created this initial list of all the words that I had known, then what I did was I took Pleco and I had integrated it with Anki, and then I created a separate Anki deck specifically for studying tones. And then what I did was I added all of the words into that deck. And now what I do as well is, even if I'm coming across a new word when I'm reading in Pleco, and even if I haven't acquired it yet, I still put it in the deck because, you know, worst case scenario, maybe I need to suspend that card because I'm not ready for it yet. But at the very least, at least it's made and it's ready to go for when I actually need to study that. And then the second thing that I did was I started using the yo-yo Chinese tone drills that you had mentioned, which is also is another very important thing that I should mention, is that I really had a problem with understanding the difference between the second tone and the third tone. And the reason why is because of the way that it's taught. I feel like when people say that the second tone is just a rising tone and then the third tone is a falling rising tone, it's very easy to hear it in isolation. But then when you actually hear it in a word, a lot of times it seems almost like the exact same or very similar if you're describing it from that perspective. And so I think that that's part of the reason why I felt like I was tone deaf, was just because I was getting kind of bad advice about what tones actually were. And so when I had seen it in the article and within the podcast episode that, you know, finding out that this third tone is actually a low tone, that to me was a complete game changer, because all of a sudden everything started to make sense. It made sense why when I heard people pronounce certain words, it sounded a certain way. And it also made sense to me just from a vocal perspective. I felt like a lot of the time when I was practicing, you know, doing things like shadowing or just trying to work on speaking in general, I felt like I was actually destroying my vocal cords. And I could say this as somebody who is a pretty musical person to begin with. And so there were certain things about how I felt when I was actually going through that process of speaking, that when I thought back to what it was that I knew about how the vocal cords worked, just didn't make any sense to me. You know, it felt like I was doing a lot of the opposite of things that people should be doing when they're trying to speak in a healthy way. And it also seemed very laborsome. It seemed like one of those things where I couldn't possibly imagine how anybody would be able to speak like this in a day-to-day scenario without destroying their vocal cords. When I found out this whole thing about the third tone being this low tone, all of a sudden everything just started to make sense. And I found that speaking became easier when I tried to implement that, because now it didn't seem like I was trying to like push my vocal cords in a way that was unnatural. And so that was kind of my experience with that. And then I've also experimented since then a little bit more with some shadowing and stuff like that. But the problem that I find with shadowing is I find that a lot of those bad habits, they seem like they come back when it comes to shadowing, particularly because there isn't really any time to think about the tones when you're shadowing. I mean, you could think about them maybe a little bit, but if you're trying to follow somebody at a regular pace, I mean, it can be very hard to actually try to follow somebody when it comes to shadowing. That could be one of the hardest things. And even trying to find time to breathe can sometimes be very hard. I find that a lot of those mistakes just really seem to come back.
This kind of ties into something that we were talking about before we start recording the podcast, which is that I've always felt in activities like shadowing a very important step in kind of the process of becoming fluent and having good pronunciation. Whenever I tried shadowing, before I'd kind of established a solid kind of foundation in my ability to pronounce the tones, I would just get all the tones wrong. So I didn't really find it very useful. I found it a lot more useful once tones were no longer a problem, once tones were easy I didn't have to put that much mental effort into pronouncing the tones. Then at that point, I could focus more of my effort on shadowing and mimicking correctly. I wanted to ask you as well, you mentioned the phrase Crashaholics Anonymous was something that you mentioned kind of tongue in cheek in the post that we read out earlier. Can you expand on what you kind of meant by this?
Yeah, well, I kind of feel like for people who very much study the comprehensible input hypothesis and people who are very focused on input only approaches, or at the very least maybe delayed output approaches, I find that there's a lot of, like I mentioned earlier, a lot of fear about speaking, a lot of fear about fossilization. And that's not necessarily the case with everybody. I know that if you look at somebody like Steve Kaufman, he doesn't really believe in a lot of the fossilization stuff. If you look at somebody like Ollie Richards, who takes a very similar type of input approach, he says speak when you want to speak, and as long as you're getting input, then you'll be fine. But I find that particularly in the Refold community, there seems to be a lot of fear surrounding when to speak, when to output, fossilization, and all these kinds of things. And so for me, I just noticed personally that I just had a lot of fear that I had to deal with. It was almost like I needed to go through this process of actually just convincing myself that it was okay to speak. And I feel like had I not had a place that I had actually wanted to go to use the language and speak with people, I feel like I probably would have ended up just waiting a lot longer to try to output. And so in a way, it was almost like I just needed to kind of convince myself that it was okay to do this so that I could go there. That's why I use the phrases that I feel like there are a lot of things that are mentioned within different language learning communities that focus on comprehensible input. At this point in my language learning journey, I feel like are perhaps detrimental to the actual language learning process. You know, it's one thing to say input is what helps you acquire a language, at least passively. It's one thing to say that. It's another thing to then start making claims about whether or not you're going to experience fossilization and things like that. You know, the thing that I noticed as well is that a lot of people within the Refold community seem to ignore some of that advice. You know, I think about Luke Truman. And, you know, he went to Taiwan and he had studied there and he was speaking with people all the time. And I think about, you know, there's somebody else in the community, you know, rather than studying the first 1,000 words, she had studied pretty much the entire deck. And so I noticed that there were all these case studies of people who actually weren't really following the refold methodology to, you know, a perfect T. And those actually ended up being the people who seemed to actually do the best really within their language learning studies and to really seem to be the most comfortable. The two of us have had a similar experience of that, of coming across these kinds of ideas and then needing to kind of be convinced out of them in a lot of ways in order to actually move forward.
It's been really interesting to hear all about the history of your Mandarin learning journey and your entire story. Where is your Chinese now at this point? And what are you hoping for the future? What are you currently working on? And what are you hoping for in the future?
When it comes to reading, I'm pretty good. I'm not perfect at it. Some of that is just because sometimes characters can be hard. I mean, even if you're somebody who has been studying for a long time, I'm still able to read generally, you know, pretty well. When it comes to listening, on the other hand, that's something that I've really been working very hard, especially within the past couple of months, trying to really bring up to a higher level. Because I found a lot of different instances where, you know, during my lessons with my teacher on iTalki, we would be having a discussion about something and she would bring up a word. And when I heard the word, I wouldn't know what the word is. But then when she wrote it down on the Google Doc sheet, all of a sudden, I knew exactly what she was talking about. And so for me, that was very revealing, that there seemed to be all these situations coming up where if I saw what it was that the word was written, you know, in characters, I would actually be able to understand what was being mentioned. But when it came to actual dialogue, I wouldn't necessarily be able to notice that. And especially in a way that was actually, you know, timely. I feel like one of the benefits of reading is that you can choose whatever pace that you would like to go at. And so you could go as slowly as you want, you can go as fast as you want. And that's one of the benefits, is that you can really spend a lot of time working on the things that you don't know. Whereas once you start to get to a real conversation with people, or just listening to conversations, you know, now that's at a much faster speed, and you don't necessarily have that mental time to be able to start remembering what the words are. And so that's one of the things that I noticed very early on learning to speak. And whereas before I was a little bit more general in what it was that I was consuming, I've been trying really hard now to be a lot more specific with finding things that would be considered comprehensible. And so I've been listening to a lot of different podcasts that are geared specifically towards learners of the language. And so I've been listening to things like Chinese with Da Peng and Shuo Shuo Hua, a very good Taiwanese podcast. Tea Time Chinese is another really good one. Talk Taiwanese Mandarin with Abby, Taiwanese Way. I mean, there's all these different podcasts. Learn Taiwanese Mandarin with Jiayu. And so there's all these different podcasts that are geared towards learners. And so what I'm doing really is trying to focus on that so that I can get that comprehensible input. And then every once in a while, I try to throw in something that maybe is a little bit more complicated, maybe just listening to a random podcast episode of something that isn't a language learning podcast. That's what I'm doing when it comes to listening. And then when it comes to speaking, really trying to improve speaking. And then the other thing that I've been doing lately is, you know, I started out originally learning traditional Chinese characters. And so now I'm actually starting to go through a lot of the graded readers again and reading them in simplified characters, because now a lot of the people that I'm making friends with at the Chinese Buddhist temple use simplified Chinese characters, of course, being from mainland China. And so in order to make it easier to communicate with them, that's something that I've really been working on. And then I've also been working on doing some writing as well. Right now, I guess one of my biggest problems is just trying to figure out how to juggle all of these things all at once, because it does kind of seem like a lot sometimes. And I'm still trying to tweak with the schedule and with how I approach it in order to make it work for me. You know, things like maybe rotating days, you know, one day I do speak something that's more speaking focused, and then the next day maybe doing something more writing focused. And the reason why actually is because, you know, I actually ended up having an opportunity presented to me when I was at the Chinese Buddhist temple that is completely, you know, a life-changing experience that maybe we can get into if you'd like to.
Absolutely. Tell us more about that then.
Yeah. So the first time that I decided to go to the Chinese Buddhist temple was in April. And so I had spent many, many months preparing, you know, practicing speaking, reading a lot of the articles from the website, and actually listening to even a lot of the recordings that were available, just trying to prepare myself for being in that type of environment. You know, it's funny that when I went there the first day, you know, I was so excited that I was going to be going there that I couldn't sleep the night before. I ended up getting like 2 or 3 3 hours of sleep. And then I ended up having to make this, you know, this giant commute, you know, even though it's only an hour and a half for me, you know, I was taking public transit, you know, taking trains and buses and subways and all those kinds of things. And so for me to get there one way takes 3.5 hours. And so I ended up having to get up very early that morning and get, you know, ready very early to get there. And on top of that, I hadn't eaten anything. And I was just nervous as well. You know, this was going to be my first time actually trying to speak in an environment that wasn't with my teacher. There was a million and one reasons to be nervous. And so what ended up happening was, I got there and I was exploring the temple for some time, taking a look at some of the statues there and reading some of the plaques. They actually have a vegetarian restaurant at the temple. And so I had gone to the vegetarian restaurant, and that was the first time that I had actually spoken with somebody using the language, using Mandarin, that wasn't my teacher. And I remember going in there and I was shaking. I was literally shaking, and I didn't know what to say. You know, I knew mentally what it is that I should say, but I was so nervous. At first, I had tried to speak, you know, using the language, but I definitely did not do a good job. It was literally even worse than I could have possibly ever imagined. You know, I did not do a good job presenting, you know, what level I had reached at that point. You know, rather than seeming like somebody who had studied the language for 2 years, I probably seemed like somebody who had been studying the language for 2 days. And so, but I mean, thankfully, you know, the ladies at the restaurant were very patient with me. And they did know a very tiny, tiny amount of English. And so they did try to actually like tell me what certain things were in English. I ended up eating there and ended up, you know, three ladies were teaching me how to use chopsticks and all this kind of stuff. And I just had a really lovely time. And then after I finished eating, I finally was able to get some of the energy back and kind of get over some of the nervousness. And so then I was able to start having conversations with the ladies there. There was actually in the restaurant, there's all these different books and different things that seemed like they were for sale. And so I was taking a look at them, and they noticed that I was looking at one of the books that was written by the abbot of the temple. And so then I started, you know, talking to them, saying, you know, asking them if they happen to have any books anywhere that I could, you know, buy, you know, chanting books and things. Even when you're searching for a lot of these things in Chinese, it's actually very difficult to find a lot of these materials online. And so, you know, I was really looking forward to maybe getting a copy of something there. You know, they told me, you know, hey, we actually have free books that we give out if you go to this room at the temple. And so then I started going around trying to find the room. I got lost, had to talk to the nun there to try to, you know, figure out where this was. And then shortly after that, I had grabbed a copy of a book, and then I had, as well as like a little printout of a sutra, the Heart Sutra, a very short sutra in Chinese. And I was, you know, thinking about leaving at that point, because it had actually been quite a long time that I had been there already. At that moment, this lady came up to me and she said, in English, she said to me, "You look very happy to be here." And so then I responded to her in Chinese saying, "Dui, wo hen gao xing." You know, she looked at me and she had this giant smile on her face. And we started talking, and, you know, I started explaining how I've been studying Buddhism for a number of years, and I was getting frustrated at the lack of translations that were available. And so I ended up deciding to learn, you know, Mandarin Chinese on my own. And I started explaining all of this to her, and she was very, very happy at the whole thing and very supportive. And, you know, and then she found out that I had never taken a formal refuge ceremony before. And so then she asked me, you know, "Do you have a Chinese name?" And I said, "No." And she said, "Would you like to have one?" And so next thing you know, she's bringing me into the main hall of the temple and having me fill out this paperwork. And then while I'm doing that, and while I'm talking to the nun there, you know, she comes out bringing me even more books. So then I end up going home with a stack of like, you know, five or six books or something like that, like quite a lot. By the way, I mean, I was actually pretty surprised to find that one of them was actually in English, which was kind of surprising considering that nothing else going on there was happening in English. And so I ended up having such a warm reception when I was there that all of a sudden, I mean, now I was being invited to all these different events and, you know, signed up for the refuge ceremony and all these different things. Fast forward about a month later, that was the day of the refuge ceremony. And I had actually gotten special permission from the temple to actually participate in one of the higher levels of the ceremony. And so in Buddhism, you have the three refuges, which is, it's the refuge ceremony. It's the thing that you basically say that you're becoming a Buddhist. Then you have the five precepts, which are a set of five, I guess you could say, life guidelines that you're choosing to follow. And normally at the temple, they wait a year in between for somebody to take the five precepts. I had actually gotten the idea from the nun there to actually ask for special permission to take the five precepts early because I had already been studying Buddhism for quite a number of years. And so after reaching out, you know, she had spoken to the abbot and head monk and the people there, and I ended ended up getting special permission to do that. The week leading up to that ceremony, actually, I had written out a letter in Chinese that I wanted to give to the abbot. I wanted to thank the abbot for allowing me to participate in the ceremony, for giving me the special permission to participate in the higher level five precept ceremony. I thought it would be a good opportunity to introduce myself a little bit and explain why I was there. And so I had written out this letter. I then left there on the day of the ceremony. And then all of a sudden, the next day, I get a phone call from the nun, telling me that the abbot would like to have a meeting with me. He had actually been so emotionally moved by the letter that I had written to him that he actually wanted to have a meeting the next day. I got there. I was escorted to this, looked kind of like a house. I ended up going into this house with the abbot and with his secretary. In the meeting, the first thing that he told me was that he had read my letter and that he was very moved by what it was that I had said to him. And he wanted me to know that he was very happy to have me there, that everybody there has been very happy to have me there, and that he wants me to think of the temple as my second home. That's how the conversation started. Then his secretary jumped in and said that there were two reasons specifically that they wanted to have a meeting with me. And so the first reason was that they told me that they actually work on a magazine that they publish, and they would like to actually write an article about my experiences trying to learn Tiantai Buddhism in the West and actually learning Mandarin Chinese specifically for learning Buddhism. Then the second thing that they ended up talking about was that they actually wanted to offer me a full-time job there. And so I was completely shocked. I didn't know what to expect going into the meeting. I had prepared certain things that I wanted to say as like a suggestions of things that we could do to help improve things at the temple. But I definitely wasn't expecting them to offer me a full-time job. They would like me to teach the monks and nuns there, and also, maybe some of the other people who are visiting the temple. They would like me to teach them English. Part of the reason for that is because where the temple is located is a very heavily Asian area, and especially a heavily Chinese area. And so up to this point, they haven't really needed to use English for anything, because all the people going there are basically, Chinese speakers. Some of the people going there don't even know English, because of the fact that it's such a heavily Chinese area. And even when you're on the bus, you'll hear people speaking in Mandarin. When you look at the stores in the area, you'll see a lot of Chinese stores that don't even have English on the signs. But they would really like to start teaching the monks and nuns there and the people there English. They would like to start holding services and classes and things of that nature in English to better reach out to the Canadian Buddhist community, or at least people interested in Buddhism. Then they would also like me to help translate articles and things into English as well. And then they also would like me to actually study under the abbot and then start teaching Buddhist classes in English. This was a two-hour meeting. Towards the end of the meeting, actually, it was decided that I'm actually going to be moving into the temple in September. By the way, one of the reasons why they decided to offer this position to me in the first place was they were impressed with the level of Chinese that I had attained up to this point. And I know that it's a very common joke within the Mandarin language learning community that all you have to say is ni hao, and all of a sudden everybody's freaking out telling you that you're the best Chinese speaker out there. But at the same time, they had decided that they wanted to offer this job because they were impressed by how much Chinese I was able to learn in a relatively short period of time. They were inspired by the interest that I had taken in the tradition specifically, and they wanted to give me an opportunity where not only can I help out with all these different things that they knew that they needed help with at the temple, but they also wanted to give me an environment where I could actually practice my Chinese every single day and practice my speaking. And they basically said, we know that your Chinese isn't perfect, but you could teach us English and we'll teach you Chinese while you're here. To me, that was a very inspiring experience, something that I never could have possibly imagined. Now my entire life has essentially changed, where basically all the stuff that I had hoped that I would be able to do, it's literally a dream come true. And I have to say that if I never had the courage to actually show up and start speaking with people, I would never have this opportunity offered to me.
Yeah, that's an amazing story. So thanks for sharing that. And also like a really nice message And I guess a lot of people often ask, you know, if you're studying a language like Mandarin Chinese or exploring different languages and cultures, like what kind of career, what kind of job can you end up doing with that? Obvious things like translator or teacher. But this is an example of how knowing Chinese and exploring that, as well as the Buddhism, led to a job. And now also the perfect situation for you going forward in terms of your Mandarin learning, because you'll be kind of immersed in that environment going forward, I guess.
Exactly. And not only that, but even just from a Buddhist perspective of actually having the opportunity to learn these things that I wouldn't otherwise be able to learn. And so it's quite a shocking experience that I even now after all this time, I'm still kind of getting used to, you know, even after doing all the things to prepare to go there, I'm still getting used to. But it was very inspiring to me to see that they were impressed by the level that I had attained, and that they actually wanted to help me with that and really go out of their way to do that for me. You know, if they really wanted somebody to help translate things, I mean, they could hire a translator who would probably do a better job than I could. But it's because of the fact that they were very emotionally moved by the letter that I had written and by me being there and spending time with the people there, that they really felt like, you know, they wanted to give me a chance. And so, I mean, this really accelerates things. Yeah, so I'm still in shock.
It's amazing, yeah. It'll be great to follow your story, hopefully going forward, and have an update possibly if you'd like to come back at some point in future to discuss how you've got on with at the temple and with your language learning and Chinese learning in general. Thanks very much for coming on and for sharing that.
Yeah, thanks so much for inviting me on, Misha. I really enjoyed it.
Hey there, thanks for listening to this episode of the I'm Learning Mandarin podcast. If you're currently looking to improve your Mandarin speaking skills, you might like to check out my Peak Mandarin newsletter, run by me and my friend Will Hart. We share exactly what you need to do to become fluent in Chinese based on our experience. Subscribe to the newsletter and we'll also send you a free copy of my ebook, Lessons from a Chinese Learning Phenomenon, which tells the story of exactly how Will Hart learned to speak near native level Chinese within a 1.5 year period, how I put his techniques into practice to become fluent myself, and how you can too. To subscribe to the newsletter, you can go to peakmandarin.com or click the link in the description. That's all for now. Until next episode, goodbye.